into the garbage, you flyboy.
This is a rebellion, isn't it?
I call it aggressive negotiations.
The garbage will do!
Hi, and welcome to this week's Trash Compactor podcast, Star Wars from a Certain Point of View. I'm MC.
I'm Sarah.
And this week we have a special guest with us. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Matt, and I'm the special guest.
Yes.
Although I'm just glad to be a guest.
Hi, special guest.
Well, we think you are very special. So
this week we are talking about Star Wars comics. So we figured what better chance to invite one of the hosts of the Star Wars Splash Page podcast on.
Exactly. Because
he actually talks about Star Wars comics all the time.
As we like to say, we are the nichest of the nichest of the niche podcasts.
So, the best kind some days.
Yeah. Totally. So thank you for having me on. What would you like to talk about Star Wars comics?
Well, I think for Star Wars comics, I mean, we've just finished a big milestone with the Star Wars comics. Because since 2015, I think it is, they've been doing the ongoing. And now they've completely renumbered everything, and now instead of being between A New Hope and Empire, now it's between Empire and Return of the Jedi. So just kind of talk about what's been happening with the Star Wars comics in that time, and just how we felt about the last 4 years,
I guess. Oh gosh, yeah, 4 years, wow.
Actually, technically it's 5 years.
Oh yeah.
So because it was January 2015 when Star Wars number one came out.
Right.
So, this is entirely entirely not unexpected.
Yeah.
Gosh knows we could not stay in between the events of A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back forever. And it's also a convenient time because I don't know whether it was, serendipitously planned for the, as I like to call it, Marvel's phase one of Star Wars comics. To all come to a conclusion at the same time as the ninth and final film in the Skywalker saga was released, although it certainly seemed that way.
Yeah.
But, at the same time, it's also it gives, I think, Marvel the chance, to leap forward into what happened after The Empire Strikes Back and before The Return of the Jedi, which is a completely, obviously, an enormous sandbox to play in with one glaring omission. There's no Han Solo.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, they'll just do one issue that's just nothing but shots of the carbonite block.
I have this image of, perhaps Bib Fortuna, an entire speechless, speech balloon-less issue of nothing but Bib Fortuna arranging Han's carbon freezing case on the wall and dusting it.
Would read that really happily.
Yeah.
You get the right person to write it and to illustrate it, it would actually be pretty compelling.
Yeah,
so
I've read a couple of silent issues of various books. And they're pretty interesting.
Yeah, there was one. The one that immediately comes to mind is from the 80s, and it was G.I. Joe, where it was Snake Eyes, and Snake Eyes doesn't speak. So,
I think
there was an issue of Batman and Robin that was silent also sometime in the past, maybe 6 or 7 years.
I think you are correct. I do indeed. So, but no, it's, Star Wars comics have had a very good run with Marvel. Star Wars number one, Star Wars volume two, number one, was the top selling comic of the last decade, which is no surprise considering when it came out,
it was 50 different covers.
At this point, probably 2 million.
Because always going to knock the sales numbers up too.
Exactly. Yeah. And it did so in a way that it, it surpassed 1 million copies ordered.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because
there were loot crate editions as well. Yeah. So, that certainly ups the numbers. And, all the new issues, all the miniseries, all the number ones had really strong debuts. I want to say it was, I think Diamond, which of course, and you have to remember these figures are print copies only, not digital, not collected trades or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just the books
just
that
floppies.
You, Exactly. You know, which a lot of people tend to forget. You know, issues like the first issue of Princess Leia came out, and it was I think it was like the 37th most popular comic in the last decade in terms of its debut. You know, it's strong, good numbers. I mean, like Poe Dameron number one came in at number 100, which is, yeah, totally. And I love, you know, if you've listened to Star Wars Splash Page, which we used to be called Comics with Kenobi. We just changed our name this year, you know, new phase, new name. But Poe Dameron was hands down mine and Jeff McGee's favorite series, because it gave us new content. It was set in the sequel trilogy era, despite being hemmed in by the sequel trilogy films and having not yet come out. You know, it gave us a lot of detail and what I thought vibrant views into that timeline.
Yeah, it opened up so many doors, mm-hmm. like so many storylines, so many characters. I mean, I love the Poe Dameron comic.
Poe Dameron comic's great. I actually just recommended it to someone.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, he hadn't read any of the comics, and I think most of the stuff I was recommending were miniseries, and then there was the Poe Dameron comics.
Yeah, it's like I would put the Poe comic at my favorite, except for the fact that Shattered Empire and the Kanan maxi series exist.
Kanan maxi series.
Uh-huh.
I love it. That is a personal favorite of mine because I love the story. You know, and you know, I was, you know, personally have never really been big into Star Wars Rebels, but the story they told in Kanan, that 12-issue maxi series, you know, from the time of him being a Padawan to, you know, to Depa Balaba, to having to endure Order 66, to meeting up and, you know, forming the cell with Hera and everybody. It's a great story, and it holds up really well. And not to give out a free plug here, but if you live anywhere near an Ollie's outlet,
mm-hmm.
the minute you hear this podcast, get in the car, listen to it in the car, and drive to Ollie's outlet, because the Kanan Maxi series hardcover is part of its liquidation right now.
So
you can get it for like, you know, $12 or $15.
I've got both the trades. I don't have the hardcover. I may have to go get that. need a copy?
You need to go.
Yeah, once it stops snowing.
There you go. No, but you're right, because I mean, there have been so many great Star Wars comics that have, I think, served what Poe Dameron did. You know, like you said, Shattered Empire. That was really awesome because it was the first new real content post Return of the Jedi. And it introduced us to Poe's parents, but okay. It also introduced us to things like, the Emperor droid. I used to know the name. It just blissed out of my head that we saw in one of the video games. And it sets up, you know, set up things like Operation Cinder, where the Empire mm-hmm. decided, all right, well, if we can't have everything, we're going to burn it all.
Right.
So these comics, I think, for that first phase, particularly with Marvel, did a real service to fans. Whether they're hardcore fans or casual fans or, you know, avid comics readers or just, you know, hey, what's this? By offering a lot of backstory to these original trilogy characters, but at the same time, creating lots of new amazing characters, chief among them, Dr. Aphra.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, Aphra.
And they've covered a lot of different bases. Like, you do have, like, the ongoing Star Wars series, which is you're going to get your Luke, Leia, Han. But then you do get series like Shattered Empire, which is mostly Shara Bae, who is a character nobody knew, but is also connecting you to the sequel trilogy. And then you do bring in characters like Dr. Aphra, who are solely comic characters and has become one of the most popular characters in Star Wars. Like, I don't...
Yeah. No, she has.
Very few people who dislike Dr. Aphra.
Nor do I. And Dr. Aphra has never been the strongest selling Star Wars comic, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, she has a very loyal fan base. Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, though the publishers they don't release information in terms of digital sales or trade sales in bookstores. People I've spoken to within Marvel have made it abundantly clear that, you know, she does a superbly brisk business digitally and with trade sales.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, no. So that's one reason why, you know, when her series ended last month at issue number 40, and as her issue was reaching its end, you know, monthly sales kept declining and declining. And I think by the end they dropped below 20,000 copies a month, which is still a fair number of comics in this mm-hmm. day and age. Marvel did not delay in saying she will be back in April with volume 2 with a new creative team, Alyssa Wong and Marika Cresta, which is going to be really kick ass. So Not to take away from anything that Kieran Gillen and Simon Spurrier and Casper Wingard and the other artistic teams have done on her series, but so she will definitely be back, and I think that we're gonna, I don't know, it may just be me, but I think Dr. Aphra would be perfect for a Disney Plus show, whether it's live action or animated.
Definitely, yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, we've already talked about I think we all really like the Poe Dameron comic. Mentioning that as one of the highlights, but you know, what are some of the other highlights of this phase one of the comics?
Oh gosh, let's see. There's the Princess Leia miniseries that came out in 2015 because, you know, it showed her going to Naboo. Mm-hmm. You know, and it showed her seeing the stained glass picture of Padme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was Terry and Rachel Dodson did the art on that and Mark Waid wrote it, but you know, in that comic, you see her come in, she sees the stained glass, you know, massive stained glass, image of Padme. Mm-hmm. And then in the next frame, you see Padme turning and looking down at Leia.
Mm-hmm.
Did it happen actually? No, but you know, it's just it's a nod. It's like, hey, it's a wink. You know, I see you. And you have to remember, Leia doesn't know this. Doesn't know that that's her mother.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I really liked that series. That it gave us a nice psychology of Leia. Because for so long, people were like, you know, Luke got to grieve over Ben and he only knew him for 5 minutes and Leia lost her whole planet. And they kind of explain why that happens, you know, that
yeah.
Leia does feel the loss of Alderaan. It's just she has to be strong because she's
in the leadership role. Yeah, she's got to project that image. You know, I'm in control here. Well, not necessarily in control, but you know, I'm here and I'm leading, and this is not going to detract from my ability to help lead this rebellion. And that is one thing I think that all the comic series did very well, especially with Leia, because I mean, you know, we had when we first started out, we had Star Wars, then we had the Darth Vader, mm-hmm. We had two runs of Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we had Dr. Aphra, and then, of course, you know, Kanan, which was the maxi series. But, you know, all throughout the first phase of Marvel Star Wars comics, we really got to see how important and critical Leia was and is to the rebellion.
Yeah.
In all those pages, and at the same time, we got to dig really deep into the psyche of Darth Vader and Anakin Skywalker, particularly in the second volume of Darth Vader that Charles Soule wrote, because, you know, he focused in, you know, he jumped in to start that series, which was like the first one was, you know, a 25 issue series. He started literally right at the end of Revenge of the Sith, where Vader is saying no and launched literally right from that point.
Yeah, the Darth Vader ones were the ones I wanted to mention, because I don't like villains. I found both of the Vader series so compelling that there were days I was asking, who am I? Why am I reading this? Why am I enjoying this so much? They're phenomenal.
They are, and they went to such great depths, literally, to tell us why he is who he is, but also, more importantly, how he was struggling with it.
Mm-hmm.
Daily. And you know, and then there's Sheev literally turning the shiv in his back at every opportunity. Yes. So
yeah,
the work on that and it built on that a lot of that Force mythology and that Sith mythology. I mean, you know, we got Lord Momon. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw how Vader's castle was built on Mustafar.
Right.
And we saw these concepts. We saw that there were other Jedi who survived Order 66, not for long, mind you, but, you know, they still survived. And, you know, and there were nods. I mean, like that whole second arc of Darth Vader Volume 2, issues 7 through 12, where it's Jocasta Nu, and she immediately, you know, when she confronts Vader, she knows who it is. She knows, mm-hmm. you're Anakin. I know who you are.
Right. So, you
know, I'm a librarian. I know stuff.
Yep. So,
but then, you know, then also, you know, we see this, you know, meek, well, I don't want to say meek, but you know, we saw her in what Attack of the Clones, I think it was, or maybe it was Attack of the Clones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, yes. And she's, you know, sort of like this, you know, stentorian, you know, librarian. And, you know, you see in the comics that she is also a Jedi Knight mm-hmm. and not afraid to fight. You know, and so that right there is, I think, why the comics are so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some hits and misses as well. The Vader Dark Visions miniseries, which I personally found compelling, except for one issue, which was the one kind of like it was the fangirl issue.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I could see the point that they were trying to make, especially because that whole miniseries was, you know, initially Chuck Wendig was slated to write it. It was even announced at New York Comic Con, and then like, you know, a month and a half later, he got fired, you know, because of his tweeting by the editor on the book. And so they brought in, I think it was Dennis Hopeless Hallam. Dennis Hallam came in to write the miniseries, and he did an admirable job, you know, because he came in with, you know, three issues that had already basically been scripted. And so what they ended up doing was, they looked at Vader through the eyes of different people throughout the galaxy. You know, I mean, in the first issue of that, Vader was seen as a savior. Mm-hmm. You know, in the second issue, you know, it was, you know, Vader was, I think it was, you know, seen as the enforcer and somebody to be feared. And then, you know, the one with that drew all the controversy was, you know, the medic on board the Star Destroyer who was enamored with Vader and, you know, collected pieces of his uniform or his, you know, his outfit because
right.
she was the one for him. And, you know, and I thought it was an intriguing story, but I thought not even he would have been so cruel as to, you know, to stab her with a lightsaber and then call her trash, because I just didn't see how Anakin Skywalker, who still exists within Vader, no matter what anybody says, I still believe Anakin is there, because that's what I think has kept Vader tempered. I just could not see someone who was raised by his mother and mm-hmm. so in love with his wife, treating anybody that badly, unless they're a Tusken Raider.
Agreed. I didn't love the Dark Visions series. I didn't dislike it. I almost forgot about it, to be honest. It just, maybe because I prefer series that have ongoing storylines, so just kind of five individual issues didn't stick real well.
Well, that makes sense, and I don't think you're alone in that assessment. I mean, if anything, Vader Dark Visions, I think, was a grand experiment by Marvel to just sort of really sort of it almost evoked Dark Horse's Star Wars tales.
Yes.
See that? Yeah.
So, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Just know, longer.
Yeah. You know, the one issue that I just thought was astounding was the one about the Star Destroyer officer chasing, you know, because he feared Vader so much mm-hmm. that he ended up getting his Star Destroyer eaten almost by you know, by one of the space slugs.
Yeah.
And you know, Brian Level did the art on that. You know, I don't want to swear because, you know, there are people who are probably underage, but it was bat bleep crazy art. And it was like reading an EC comic from the 1950s. With a 2000 AD Strontium Dog Judge Dredd sentimentality from the 1980s. You know,
yeah.
I love the art so much that I ended up buying two or three pages from him when he was at Wizard World in Philly. I mean, on the spot. Spent a lot of money on it. But I was like, yep, I got to have those. Those are awesome. because it was creepy. It's still probably it's in my top five issues of the year. So.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm trying to think which other ones I really, really loved.
TIE Fighter? The Rogue One adaptations?
I like Rogue One a lot.
Yes, you know why? Why? Tell me why.
Because it's Jodie Houser?
Yes, exactly. And?
I don't, because I love Rogue One. I think Rogue One is my favorite of the Disney era movies. So
I'm right with you on that.
Not love it.
No, what to me, I think what made the Rogue One adaptation stand out was it literally served as a director's cut, because we got material in the comic that was just maybe perhaps implied in the movie, and we got to see it.
I agree up to a point with that. A lot of what is in the comic is also in the novelization. So. Yes, it's like a director's cut, but so is the novelization of it.
Yeah, but it was also nice to see Marvel really do that. And that may have been a Lucasfilm story group effort, mm-hmm. you know, because that's the one thing, like you said, you know, the novelizations of the films contain a lot more information which rightfully they should, because it's a lot cheaper to write a story than film a, you know, 25 minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Marvel really raised the bar with the Rogue One adaptation, because the Force Awakens adaptation was literally an adaptation. There was nothing new. You know, it was just, you know, oh, look, it's a movie on printed page.
So, right. But it was nothing exciting.
Yeah, but then when, you know, Gary Whitta did the Last Jedi adaptation, they followed the path of the Rogue One adaptation and added detail and material that really fleshed out the story, I thought. So.
Yeah.
And it was also great art, too. Michael Walsh.
I didn't mind. That was so pretty.
I bought a couple of pages from him as well. So.
Nice. I also really like the Galaxy's Edge.
You know, that was a surprise. My Galaxy's Edge number one was the top-selling Star Wars comic for 2019.
Really?
Yeah, it, I think it came in at, I want to say, like, number 57 or something in the top 100. I thought it was interesting because, you know, it had the real potential of just being, oh, ha, 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 Disney's trying to move merch, you know, it's Galaxy's Edge.
Right.
And it, and that five-issue miniseries ended up being really relevant.
Yeah, it did. I mean, although that one in particular, I do want to reread sometime in the next, when are we leaving for California? 3.5 weeks?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
3.5 weeks, because we'll be at Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, I'm so envious. I'm so envious. I so want to go.
I'm so excited. But that one comic in particular, I want to just reread, look at, kind of pick out all the details. Because I know it's good to start with, but I want to see kind of how it enhances actually visiting Batuu.
Yes. And I'm sorry, I was wrong. It was number 51, not number 57. So,
trust your word anymore.
and just to give you an idea of what a big deal that is, the next closest title was Star Wars Allegiance number one, and it was at number 221.
Ooh, wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, well, obviously having the book on sale at the parks didn't hurt. But, I mean, I think the first three issues went through multiple reprintings.
Huh, so that's awesome.
But it was a good, solid story. I mean, it really had a lot of great detail. And, it stood by itself. It could have been published even if there was no Galaxy's Edge.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is an important thing when you're doing things that connect to stuff like that. At least make it interesting for people. Like, I don't care if you're trying to sell tickets to a theme park, make it something that people actually want to experience.
I think that's critical. For example, like the Mace Windu miniseries, it drew a lot of scorn because a lot of people didn't appreciate the way Dennis Cohen drew the book. But the story was superb because it gave us a really ground level view of Jedi hubris. And, you know, I mean, and, you know, it was great seeing Mace Windu and seeing some of his backstory. But it also, you know, you had these supporting characters who were all, you know, Padawans or Padawan learners. You know, they were seeing the forest and the trees, whereas, you know, the Jedi Masters were not. You know, the Jedi Masters were too focused on, well, you know, for thousands of generations, you know, we've been the protectors of peace and justice. And the younger ones are like, you don't understand. You know, look around you. I mean, it's not working. So, right. You know, it's got to be done in a different way. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, one of those ended up actually showing up in the second Darth Vader book as an Inquisitor.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah, it was the blind Jedi.
I'll have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, so you know, it's, you know, so it was a nice way. That's been another key aspect, I think, of Marvel's Star Wars comics, is they have not been scared of making callbacks to other publishing moments and bringing the characters in and around. So, you know, giving them some depth. You know, one thing that really stood out to me, at least in terms of the comics, was the Target Vader miniseries. You know, and when it was announced, of course, there was that way and cry of, oh, God, not another Vader book. It wasn't
people
a Vader.
Like Vader.
Vader sells, but it was not a Vader book.
It wasn't.
It was a Bylert Valance book. And it was, you know, it was taking Bylert Valance, you know, who first appeared way back in what, Star Wars number 16, volume one, as a bounty hunter, and bringing him back in to canon, you know, because, you know, actually expanding upon his new canon story, because he actually appeared in the Han Solo Imperial Cadet miniseries, which was also great fun because, you know, that was basically like a prequel to Solo, a Star Wars story.
Right.
It ended up becoming sort of this love letter to, you know, the 1977 to 86 Marvel Star Wars series, because it was just over the top action, a lot of intrigue, and it proved so popular that that's why we're getting a Bounty Hunter's book starting in March, you know, by Ethan J. Sachs, you know, who wrote Target Vader. So, and it's starring Valance. We would be remiss if we did not mention Star Wars Adventures.
Oh, Star Wars Adventures is so wonderful.
It is pure whimsy and fun. And I think the all ages imprimatur is a bit of a misnomer, because I mean, it is literally a book that's easily read whether you're 5 or 6 years old or, you know, approaching 100 years old.
Well, so, that's why it's all ages and not kids.
Yeah, but you know, I think because it's all ages, you know, a lot of people say, nah, I don't need to read that. And they're missing good stories if they don't read it. And they're missing great art. Oh my God.
Oh, the art. Of all the comics, MC and I have a friend who does jewelry, comic book jewelry. I have been snagging old copies of Star Wars Adventures to rip apart and have them make me charms out of.
That is so cool.
More so Adventures than any of the other Star Wars comics.
Well, you get those artists, you know, whether it's Elsa Charretier or Ariana Florian, Margot Salto.
Derek Charm. And,
oh, yes, of course, Derek Charm.
Yeah.
And he's such a sweet guy, too.
So, yeah, he is.
I mean, but the stories, you know, because, you know, they're sort of one and done, although IDW, to their credit, has, you know, on occasion done like 2 or 3 issue story arcs that make a lot of sense. But then you get those great little backup stories, you know, that you tend to be, you know, short and sweet and to the point, you know, feature droids or, you know, or somebody else. And mm-hmm. and they're just so much fun to read. And of course, they did that whole Forces of Destiny, which, again, ostensibly was a tie-in, you know, to the Forces of Destiny shorts and the Forces of Destiny dolls or toys. But they were such good stories.
They really were.
I mean, you know, what? Hera, Padme, Princess Leia. I'm missing a couple. But they were just, they were good stories. and just so fun to read.
Yeah, people, if you're not reading the Star Wars Adventures, you're missing really good
check
books.
It out, because you can find them, you know, you can find them, they're still on store shelves, you know, they mm-hmm. you know, and it was IDW that I think it was, I want to say it was 2016, maybe it was 2017, they had a one shot that was all about Rey on Jakku, set mm-hmm. Right before The Force Awakens, and because it was a Loot Crate exclusive, it was like the top selling Star Wars comic that year, although it didn't really count because it didn't go through Diamond, so they couldn't register it as such. But here's the thing, it was a good story.
Yeah,
you know, you get to start, you know, you get to see your scavenging and, you know, dealing with, you know, with Unkar Plutt, you know, and just, and it added context and layers to Rey.
Really good stuff.
So now, where do we go in 2020? It should be fun. We've already got 4 series, one of which has started. Star Wars,
Darth Vader, Dr. Aphra, and Bounty Hunters.
And Bounty Hunters. And then, of course, we'll get the last 3 issues of the Rise of Kylo Ren miniseries. That will conclude in March. And that one's just been a monster hit, although I don't think it was marketed properly. I don't think they anticipated the demand for this series, especially even, you know, more so now, given the events of the Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the coming year, you know, they haven't really said anything else of what might be coming. But I would not be surprised if we got perhaps some sort of tie-in to The Mandalorian. Not necessarily an adaptation and not something that would really go into deep detail about the character himself. But I could see something tied into it. We got
so many side characters.
Oh, my gosh.
That deserve their own stories.
I would love a Greef Karga one-shot, so...
I would love an Armorer one-shot, ongoing, mini, whatever you want to give me.
Do you think she's a Zabrak?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That
I was wondering,
would be awesome.
Because of her helmet. You know,
yeah, as soon as you said it.
It may just be, you know, decorative or ornamental, but I'm wondering, you know, especially now that we know that Mandalore is a creed mm-hmm. and not a race. So.
But yeah, all of the Mandalorian characters I would quite happily read more about.
Oh, gosh, yes. And I'm convinced that we will get a Clone Wars comic again, especially with the Clone Wars coming.
Don't say that in front of Sarah. She'll just melt.
We had better get more Clone Wars comics, please.
I think we will. I mean, because, you know, Star Wars Adventures did a great job of doing Clone Wars era stories.
Yeah, so I know.
I think a Clone Wars comic, you know, whether it's published by Marvel or IDW, would go over really well.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. Especially they're doing the Clone Wars book anthology.
Yes, you know, kind of so like from a
why
certain
would
idea.
You not do a comic marketing off that idea?
Well, you know, synergy is corporate energy, so it'd make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and you've got a lot of comic authors who you know, who are writing these short stories for them. So,
right.
You know, I mean, goodness gracious, you know, we got that Dr. Aphra story in the From a Certain Point of View that Kieran Gillen wrote. You know, I mean, my God, even Kelly Sue DeConnick wrote a story. Yeah. You know, in the Certain Point of View one, so which was a great one. I would probably maybe count on an adaptation of The Rise of Skywalker toward the end of the year?
Yeah. I think that's kind of a given because they've done all the others.
So. Yeah, it would be kind of odd if they did not do it.
Right.
My big hope for 2020, though, mm-hmm. a Poe Dameron omnibus edition.
That would be pretty.
I want all 31 issues collected in hardcover.
I wouldn't be able to fit it anywhere, but it'd be really pretty.
You know, you get it. You could just set it up, use it as a table.
Yeah, basically. I'd be tempted.
It'd be awesome, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. What else do we want in 2020?
Do we want? Oh, well.
Like, gosh. Okay. So if in your...
The Cloud Riders.
Yeah. I was going to say, in your wildest dreams, what would you pick?
My wildest dreams, an Infest Nest and Cloud Riders, whether mini or maxi. I don't want a one-shot. I want at least five issues. I'd be happy with 12 issues. Okay. I would really love Akira miniseries.
Ooh, that would be cool.
You know, you could, you know, set it, you know, as she joins Crimson Dawn, you could set it after Crimson Dawn, you know, after the mm-hmm. events of Solo, A Star Wars Story, you know, as she works with Maul, you know, to flesh out and run Crimson Dawn. Mm-hmm. I think that would be incredible.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Both of those, I like those. Yeah, because, I mean, like, let's face it, they're not going to continue Solo in movies, even if they've left these threads. Comics are kind of the perfect way to carry those on, because I do want to know what happened to Infus Dust. I do want to know what happened to Kira.
I mean, you know, these are the perfect ways to do it. I mean, because, you know, we got an idea of what happened to some of the Cloud Riders. I mean, because, you know, Benthic Two Tubes. You know, he was a Cloud Rider, then he ended up joining Saw Gerrera's Partisans, and then he ended up surviving Jedha in the pages of Star Wars Volume 2. Mm-hmm. So this is my pie in the sky, and this stems from The Rise of Skywalker, but I want a Luke and Lando miniseries.
I was thinking that too when I saw that movie. I was like, there's a story here and I want it.
There's a lot of stories.
Well, torn between whether I want that in a comic or in a novel, but I want it.
Oh, it would work both ways. A novel would be awesome because you could get like 300 or 400 pages out of it.
Exactly. So, but I'd also love to see their adventure. Yeah.
And then I think we do need to get a Babu Frick one shot.
Yeah.
Yep.
We need a Babu Frick anything.
Hey! Yes.
I want a Dio one shot.
That would be kind of cool, actually. You know, I could definitely see that.
Even if it's a continuation, the adventures of Dio and BB-8.
You know, one of the best one-shots of Marvel's first phase was the C-3PO one-shot. And, you know, and it basically showed how he got his red arm.
The red arm one.
Yeah.
But it was just a great story, though, because, you know, we find out that C-3PO is not just this nattering nabob. He's just, he's a spy master, and he's got a rather extensive network across the galaxy.
I love that one, because it was so unnecessary and yet so good.
Yeah. And I mean, it took forever to come out. But, it don't get delayed and delayed, but it showed a lot of great, you know, it's like, well, that makes sense now. So, And it was also done like in Star Wars, because like in the last arc of Star Wars Volume 2, you know, each issue was basically broken down into three separate stories, one with Leia and Han, one with Luke, and then one with C-3PO and Chewbacca. And then, you know, after having read that arc, and then I went back and watched The Empire Strikes Back, you know, I'm going, oh, now I know why Chewie was so determined to reassemble C-3PO. They're buddies. They have a history, which, you know, it, you know, again, as MC says, you know, that's the perfect thing about comics is it's a much cheaper way to fill in, you know, plot points or even fill in backstory, but also to give us new stories that still jive with what we know already. Great time to be reading Star Wars comics. It really is.
Yeah, I think my wish is, I mean, I've said it before. I want the Chopper BB-8 buddy cop comedy. That's forever going to be my answer.
And it's got to be written and drawn by Chris Eliopoulos.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It has
to. Dang, now I want that. That almost beats my one. Because it should surprise no one. I want a Wedge Antilles story.
Oh, my God. Just like a young Wedge or Wedge, you know, Wedge with Nora Wexley.
I don't care.
Just as long as it's Wedge.
Either. A Wedge and Nora story flashing back to Wedge being young.
That would be cool. I could be down.
Which you're never going to get, but that's my I want.
You never know. I mean, you never know. It could happen. So, you know, although MC, you know, I have to admit, you know, Sarah and I were watching Rise of Skywalker together in the same theater. She was behind me, and I think she heard me when I saw Wedge on the screen go, Wedge!
No, I didn't hear you because I was squealing too loudly. Yeah. Now, you know what comic we forgot is coming out this year? Sort of, maybe. Kind of Project sort of. Luminous.
Well, there's definitely, yeah, because that's going to be publishing.
Because, because IDW and Marvel were both not allowed to say anything about it.
Everyone's locked in, yeah. And, you know, Charles Soule is working on Project Luminous, and of course he writes Marvel comics. Kevin Scott is working with it, and he writes Star Wars adventure stories for IDW. Right. So we're definitely going to get something to that. You know, I know that the rumor is now is it's going to be related to perhaps the High Republic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was a mention in The Rise of Kylo Ren number 2 about the High Republic,
you know,
whether or not it's, you know, intentional or not. That's going to be cool. And they are being very tight-lipped about this one. So, I'm wondering if this is going to be like a big reveal at San Diego Comic-Con or if it'll be something, you know, maybe.
They've been saying early this year we're supposed to hear something.
Okay.
It was supposed to be late last year. I thought they were saying January, but.
It could be. You never know.
But that's another comic related something.
Yeah, that's like
coming out.
I wouldn't be surprised if that rolled across comics, books, Disney Plus, online stuff as well, and maybe perhaps a game of some kind.
Yeah, it does sound like it's going to be pretty all encompassing. Like we've got like a basis for it, but I don't even think that we've heard everything about it. And especially if it's going to be about the High Republic, if they're busting open this whole new era of Star Wars, I think they're going to try everything with it.
This might be like the first phase of it.
It could be. And I could see them probably, you know, incorporating a 5-issue miniseries or a 6-issue miniseries, you know, as a way to implement, I guess. That's going to be cool though. Good call. Good remember.
I do have those moments once in a while. I don't know. What else did we either love, look forward to, want more of, etc.?
I want to see, I'm very happy with the creative teams we've gotten on the Star Wars comics. Mm-hmm. I do want to see some other writers and artists come in. For example, you know, I really want to see Fiona Staples draw a Star Wars comic. She draws Saga. She's
Saga, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'd love her to do a Dengar book. And I remember I was tweeting with her a while back, and you know, she had said something, oh my gosh, a Bounty Hunters book would be great. Personal wish, my biggest wish is to see Daniel Jose Older, the writer, come and write some Star Wars comics. So
that would be cool.
That would be cool, yeah.
I mean, I think it would be.
Yeah, because he's just done the novels, right?
He has, yeah. He did my flat out absolute favorite story in the From a Certain Point of View anthology, which it was about the stormtrooper who said, nap. I'm going to ride off into the desert. I'm quitting.
That's right. I forgot that he wrote that one. Yeah, I remember the story.
And I loved, you know, because, you know, I listened to the audiobook version. It was perfect.
Didn't he also read it in the audio version?
He did. So.
Wow.
And it was.
I need to go back to that.
It was laconic and iconic the way he performed it. So, mm-hmm. I could just hear it in his voice and just visualize that trooper going, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Whatever. You do you. So, personally, you know, I buy the floppy editions of the Star Wars comics, but that's mostly to give away the digital codes on the splash page feed. You know, I read them hardcore digitally because it enables me to zoom in, because the older I get, the more my eyes fail. So I love being able to blow them up on my my 32-inch monitor and really zero in on the art. But I'm a big fan of omnibus editions and hardcovers because I like that heft of holding them in my lap while I'm reading them. So I would love to get, you know, I'd love to see the Kieran Gillen run on Star Wars, what issues 38 to 67 get collected as a hardcover. You know, I want to see more Lando content. You know, we were lucky. We had two Lando miniseries in the first wave. You know, we had the first Lando series that showed how Lobot became Lobot that Charles Soule wrote. And then we had, you know, the Solo a Star Wars story Lando that Roddy Barnes wrote that I thought was great. Mm-hmm. So it really captured the essence of the character perfectly. But Lando has always been one of my favorite characters. And, you know, aside from, those now legend novels, which are great still, I still love them. You know, we don't know a lot about him.
More Lando would always be good.
And then I do want to see more sequel trilogy stuff.
Yeah.
I want to learn more about these characters.
I think we'll get more sequel trilogy stuff now.
I think you're right. Now that there's
now that there's no more secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that they're no longer beholden to the film.
Yeah. I still want to get more Luke post Return of the Jedi because it's still pretty, you know, question mark at this point. Mm-hmm. I would like this Poe Spice Runner story to be explained because
I need
an explanation for it.
That, yeah, because that kind of upended pretty much the Poe Dameron series. Wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, because I remember actually, you know, when I got home after watching TROS for the first time, you know, I messaged Jeff. I said, Spice Runner? What?
Yeah.
That's about what our conversation sounded like.
So, it's like, did not see that coming. So I guess everybody has to rebel, though. You know, I could see Poe rebelling.
Yeah.
You know, telling his dad, I hate you, Dad. I'm going to go run Spice. I don't want to be a New Republic pilot.
But this means that there's some splaining to do in whatever medium. And I think comics would work really well for that. Maybe we could actually see what Zori Bliss looks like then, because we only ever got to see her with the visor off, not the whole helmet.
I was shocked that we even got to see her with the visor off.
I mean, like, that's true. I was surprised. Yeah.
And I like the character. I like Zori Bliss a lot. Yeah. Matter of fact, she was the only action figure I bought when they had that whatever Force Friday was.
Oh.
She was the only one I went looking for. So, and I found her at the Target. I found her at the Target over at Wincoat, Sarah. So.
Oh, nice.
There's a lot of sequel stuff that they can do, and there's a ridiculous number of characters that are not like the Luke Leia Han Trinity that I think that they need books in some ways.
Well, and I think we are served, you know, I think the OT characters are served by basically, you know, the Darth Vader and the Star Wars books.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, you know, to a large degree, they will probably always be a part of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It would not surprise me if maybe not this year, but eventually that they do another ongoing series with the sequel trilogy characters. That would not shock me.
I think they'd have to figure out where to put it first.
Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of it, though, because they could do it post TROS, I think, because they could.
They need to make a decision that they're not going to continue with those characters in the films. Then.
That's why I think it's going to take a while for it to happen.
Yeah, that's my only limitation on that one. I would love to see an ongoing with the sequel characters.
I think it would be important for them to sort of keep them in the consciousness, and you know, and to. Also to appeal to people for, you know, to those for whom the sequel trilogy is their first Star Wars.
Right.
Yeah, I think right now the story group is probably all getting together and it's like, okay, we have to figure out what's happening with these characters now.
What are we allowed to use and what aren't we?
Exactly.
I think another thing that will probably inform their decision making is the fact that, you know, is that the old people like me, how long can you cater to us before, you know, you do so at the expense of, you know, those who came of age for the prequel trilogies and those who are in the sequel trilogy? I mean, I think for the old farts like me, we'll always be happy with a single comic.
Yeah, no, I can see that. It's like, even if I don't love every single thing that Marvel is doing with Star Wars at any given point, as long as there's one that I adore, I will be happy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to a large degree, they've been really good about, you know, both Marvel and IDW have been really good about doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Aphra is a clear case, you know, clear example right there. Star Wars Adventures, you know, they don't shy away from doing prequel era story content. They don't shy away from doing, you know, Clone Wars story content.
And I give them so much credit for that because everyone else seems to be ignoring those two.
And they do so at their own peril.
I know. It's like, you know, come on, give us some more prequels, give us some more Clone Wars, give us some more Rebels, please.
I got to admit, you know, I mean, I went to see the prequels as they came out. I enjoyed them, didn't get into them, but I enjoyed them. But reading them in the comics has really reawakened a love for the prequel trilogy within me.
The Age of the Republic comics that they came out with, I really loved those ones. I thought they did a really great job.
That was a splendid idea and a perfect way to do that. You know, basically having this, you know, this maxi series focusing on the three key areas. And yeah, these were characters. You know, oh God, another Boba Fett story.
But it was only one issue.
It was one issue and it was a good story.
And it was. And then you moved on to the next character.
Not every issue was a hit. Not every issue was a miss.
Yeah.
Right.
But they were good. Like the sequel trilogy, you know, I liked the General Hux story.
Oh, the Hux one was great.
Which one was the Hux one? I don't even remember. I'm sorry.
The Hux one was the one where they land on the planet with the Alderaanian there.
Yeah. Kylo are marooned.
Right.
The son of Princess Leia.
Yes. Oh, yes. Now I remember.
Sniveling little rat.
Yeah.
Oh, you think I'm not going to remember that one where a technician is the one who...
Oh, boy.
Oh, no, it was good stuff, you know, and maybe we'll see more of that. You know, I would love if they would bring that back as sort of a semi-annual recurring event.
Oh, yeah.
You use the banner and you knock out, you know, okay, you know, over the next, you know, in the next 2 months, we're going to bring out 8 issues, you know, one a week, hero, villain, hero. And you could really just rotate through all the characters.
Yeah.
There's certainly enough characters out there.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is so many characters. And you know, and that's I think that's what sets Star Wars fans apart, even from like comics fans, is that we know who all of these characters are, even if they only had, you know, 8 seconds of screen time on an episode of the Clone Wars. So
8 seconds. That's a major character right there.
Exactly. Yeah. I need to know that person. I need to know that creature's history. You know, what made that creature what it was?
So, where did they come from?
Why were they flying a YT-1300 and not a YT-1400?
Who did they speak to before they came on screen?
Who hurt them?
Oh, some days I really do love Star Wars fandom.
Yeah, it could be great. It could be mind-numbingly like Kill Me Now sometimes, but thankfully that's not all the time. That's a small smidgen of the time. So the rest of the time it's, hey, you see this character? Oh, I love him. This is now an Infest Nest Stan account. Sorry, I don't make the rules. So
I think that just about wraps things up in terms of Star Wars comics. We are aggressively pro Star Wars comics.
Give us more.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's, you know, as I tell people, you know, when I'm proselytizing them at the comic shop, you know, I said, look, this is the only way you're going to get new Star Wars content pretty much almost every week.
Yeah.
You're going to get a new Star Wars story, you know, and you can read it while you're standing in the comic shop, though I don't recommend that you do that because it's not a library. And you can decide, yeah, I'm into this, you know, or no, that one's not for me. But, you know, let me look at this series. It's a perfect way to keep Star Wars alive.
And I'd say they definitely have more hits than they have misses in terms of the comic.
They've got a good team.
Yeah. And even their misses are more neutral misses.
Yeah.
Than actually bad.
Yeah. It's more, I'm going to forget this like 5 minutes after I read it, but not
that. Right. None of it is, this will stick with me because it's terrible.
Some of them are stuff that sticks with you. Like, you know, I still remember going, you know, that one page in, I think it was Darth Vader, where Boba Fett gets back on the Star Destroyer and tells Vader, you know, his name is Luke Skywalker.
Oh, yeah.
Boba Fett leaves, and then you see Vader just, you know, force almost break the glass on the Star Destroyer. Yeah, I still remember that. That's how, you know, wow.
Yeah, that was powerful. Yeah.
So you do have those moments.
So to our listeners out there, you can tell us what your favorite of the Star Wars comics are and what you're looking forward to in the upcoming year or years. You can contact us on Twitter at SW Trash Podcast, and I am MC Frotis on Twitter.
I'm Murnell.
You can find Star Wars Splash Page on Twitter and Facebook at SW Splash Page Pod. Our Twitter and Facebook tend to mirror each other, so we always have new, you know, cover reveals and information about the coming week's comics. And as a matter of fact, we make it a point to always pin that to the top of both pages, so that if you go to either one of our pages, you can immediately know which comic is coming out next week.
And definitely check out that podcast. It is wonderful.
Not as wonderful as yours, though. I mean, I'm so limited now to time-wise, but you guys are always on the rotation.
Oh, thank you.
Make us blush.
Sorry.
And you can, of course, also contact us on Facebook, Tumblr, YouTube. We're Trash Compactor Podcast on all of these places. And if you go to our Patreon at Trash Compactor Podcast, we're starting to put up some exclusive Patreon episodes.
Sweet.
Definitely check that out.
I'm going there right now.
Do we want to tell people what the first one, if they subscribe, is?
Sure, because that will be going up this week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure when it was going to be live.
The first exclusive episode on Patreon is going to be all about the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
That we know nothing about.
Yeah, our wish list on the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Oh, but it's been canceled, remember? I read it on the internet. Abe Lincoln said it was canceled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ah, internet.
Yes.
Yeah, what's the old chestnut? If it's not on StarWars.com, it's it's not accurate. So.
Seems about right.
Yeah.
Unless it's on here. If it's on here, it's definitely right. So.
This is true.
We are always 100% accurate.
There you go.
At least as far as our own heads go.
And on that note, until next time, may the force be with you.
This is the way.
Always.